In recent years, solar energy has gone from the fringe to mainstream. Solar costs have dropped dramatically, while solar installations have similarly increased. Solar still provides less than 1% of the nation's power, and in states like Wyoming, it's virtually non-existent. But many predict solar power will play a much larger role in the future. Among them is Philip Warburg, author of the recently published book Harness the Sun, America's Quest for a Solar-Powered Future. He joined Wyoming Public Radio's energy reporter Stephanie Joyce to talk about what he learned on his tour of solar projects all across America.
So one of the things that you note throughout the book is that solar has really gone from being an energy source that was almost exclusively appealing to environmentally minded consumers to having really a more broad spectrum appeal. For example, you talk about how solar has become very popular with many libertarians who see it as a way to challenge utility monopolies. Can you explain how solar made that leap?
For the past century, really, we've thought about electricity as generated by central power plants that are remote from our homes and businesses. Often people really don't even know where their power is coming from or what the source of that power is in terms of the fuel type used. What's great about net metered solar is it's very clear where that power is coming from, and we actually can take charge of generating a substantial portion of our electricity needs.
You dedicate a fair bit of time in your book to something I hadn't given much thought to. I think there's a popular perception that solar is an environmentally consequence-free energy source, but you say that's not the case. Can you explain what are some of the environmental downsides to solar energy?
There is no such thing as totally clean energy. Solar does have its downsides. Among other things, solar takes up quite a lot of space. And I think one of the things that we need to do is to take maximal advantage of solar where it can be installed in built-up areas. But there are plenty of rooftops that don't accommodate solar because of the wrong orientation or because of shading. But there are other opportunities such as industrial brownfields. Now, the drawback there is that brownfield solar can be somewhat more expensive than building solar on open lands. And what we're finding today is that a good number of solar developers are looking to farmland and in some cases natural open spaces to build their solar projects because it's less expensive to do so. So I think we have to take great pains to make sure that we minimize the impact on the landscape.
Obviously, space and land use are big issues, but they aren't the only ones that you mention. You talk about how some solar panel components are toxic, that many solar panels, in fact, most solar panels these days are made in China, and that some of the factories that make them are powered by coal plants. If we're going to dramatically increase solar panel production and solar use in this country, does the industry need to address those issues?
Well, I should say that the majority of panels that are used are made from crystalline silicon, and those panels have very, very minuscule amounts of toxics. The panels that are somewhat more problematic are called thin film photovoltaics, and they do have some toxics that need to be handled with care. Part of what we have to do is develop a sophisticated recycling industry, and frankly, with the growth of the solar industry, I think we will see that recycling industry develop. A lot of the materials that go into solar panels can be safely recycled. Most of the weight of solar panels is glass. It's about 80%. And there are metals in the framing as well that can be easily recycled. So we need to plan ahead for that and scale up our recycling as the first generation of solar panels begins to near the end of its productive life.
Right now, you know, a big topic in Wyoming is cleaning up coal mines, cleaning up oil and gas wells. Wyoming requires bonding for both of those. Is that something that's being discussed for solar, having solar bonds before solar panels can be installed?
One company has experimented with that, and I think the problem there is that it's obviously an added cost. So unless the entire industry goes that route, any one company that offers that kind of safeguard is going to be penalized in the marketplace. I think we need uniform standards that ensure that we will have proper and safe recycling and disposal of solar technology.
Solar still accounts for just a tiny fraction of our overall electricity use. And many critics have argued that in the long run, it really can't replace baseload generators like coal and gas and nuclear, because it's not always on. So what changes need to happen in order for solar to play a bigger role in our energy system?
There's no question that if we're going to move toward a renewable energy economy, we're going to have to become a lot more sophisticated, a lot more nuanced in the way that we produce our electricity and in the way that we use our electricity and in the way that we store our electricity. We are going to need to develop storage technologies so that we can, in a sense, even out the bumps in the production and create a perfect balance between consumption and production of electricity. Another thing is within our households and within our businesses, there are ways that we use electricity on a constant basis where we could be doing so intermittently, again, to help create a perfect balance between production and consumption. We've seen fundamental changes in the way we do a lot of things in terms of, for example, telecommunications. When you look at the way we regarded telecommunications two decades ago, it looked fundamentally different than the way it looks today. And I think the same thing will happen with electricity production and use. The way it looks in 2030 or 2040 will be very different than the way it looks and functions today.
Politics have played a really big role in the recent success of solar. A 30% federal tax credit that was introduced by Bush and extended by President Obama has been critical. That tax credit is about to expire in 2016. Is solar ready to stand on its own two legs without that incentive and other incentives?
I think we have lived for the past century providing very substantial and sustained subsidies to the traditional fossil fuel industries and to the nuclear industry. And continuity is very important in the development of any technology. Will solar survive the demise of the investment tax credit? At some level, solar will continue to be invested in. It will severely slow down the industry, which would be, I think, a grave mistake at this very early stage in its development.
I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
My pleasure.